3, 2, 1. Wait.
Blast off!
Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Girls Like You, the premier Barbie movie podcast. So this week we're going to be talking about two Barbie movies that came out in 1987, well before the current Barbie movies that we know and love. They were called Barbie and the Rockers, Out of This World, and Barbie and the Sensations, Rockin' Back to Earth, which featured the same band with two different names for some reason. Here, Alyssa's going to tell you a little bit about the plot.
Okay, so we start off with watching Barbie do her world tour. She's loved and known by everyone. She's named Ambassador of World Peace. So, big deal, big title to uphold. As the press keeps on asking her what she's going to do next, and she keeps saying that it's going to be out of this world. So after Barbie and her band go to a sky restaurant in the clouds, Barbie tells the world and her band that their next gig is in space.
In space.
In space. So they take off in a pink rocket with Barbie plastered on the side, because how else? And then they go do their concert at the International Space Station, once again broadcasted to everyone in the world, and everyone loves it. They eat it up. They're like, wow, Barbie's so good. So this is like the end of like part one of the series, or the movie. So part two, they, on their way back to Earth, they see a wormhole with clocks, and they're like, that's weird, and they proceed forward. They end up on Earth, but it seems to be 1959 and not 1987. How did that happen? Don't know. And they meet a little girl named Kim and her scientist dad. So Barbie asks the scientist dad, can you get us back to 1987? And he's like, I can try my best. And so Barbie looks at the gang and says, well, we're here. Might as well make the most of it.
I'm just like, I think that attitude is just what makes Barbie Barbie. You know, it's
right.
1989. Become famous.
Time and space have completely crumpled around her. But you know what? She's like, let's just make the best of it. It's 1959.
She has that can-do attitude.
Exactly.
So Barbie asked the scientist dad, can you get us back to 1987? And he's like, I can try my best. And so Barbie looks at the gang and says, well, we're here. Might as well make the most of it.
I'm just like, I think that attitude is just what makes Barbie Barbie. You know, it's
right.
1989.
Become famous.
Time and space have completely crumpled around her. But you know what? She's like, let's just make the best of it. It's 1959.
She has that can-do attitude.
Exactly.
So after they like are like, well, we're here in 1959. Time to make the most of it. They get ready for a sock hop. Much like the previous scenes where she gets ready for concerts and stuff. So it's just like a bunch of montages of them getting ready for stuff. So then they go sock hopping at everyone's, and they perform as a band. And everyone in the 50s are like, wow, Barbie's great. We love Barbie. And then she becomes world famous again, but in past tense. And then after she takes photo shoots, the scientist dad approaches her and is like, hey, we found you a way to get home. And he says this after realizing the way they got there, which was the planets were aligned and Ken stroked a magical strum on his guitar and sent them to 1959. So they just have to do the same thing again when the planets align during her concert, her next concert, to go back home. So they do the thing again. They do the concert. But before Barbie goes on, she's approached by Kim, who's again the scientist dad's daughter, and she's really sad because Barbie's her only friend that she has. So she's very sad to see Barbie go, and Barbie's like, no, it's okay, and gives her her locket necklace. And so they make it back home, and then she makes it back. They all make it back in time for their welcome back concert in 1987. And then she sees a woman wearing her locket necklace. And what do you know? It's Kim.
What?
Um, And Kim's with her daughter. She's like, Mom, wow, you know Barbie. And she's like, yeah, I wasn't lying to you. And then, so, and that's like, that's it. Then they just like end rocking out. Like, wow. So what a ride.
What a good, I like the idea that Kim and her daughter, like this has been a real fight they've had for years. Like she tries to convince her daughter that I know Barbie. She's like, Mom, no, you don't. Why do you do this? It was embarrassing when you came to my school to talk about Barbie. Barbie was it in 1959. And now it's kind of like, ha ha, I was right, child. That's how I felt. That was really like Kim's turmoil from this experience.
So the moral of the story is don't backtalk your mom. Just believe
the moral is that Barbie is God.
Yeah, can we talk about this for a second? So just look, analyzing this movie like through the context of the traditional time travel theory, like it, clearly the butterfly effect doesn't exist in this universe. So I think of two other possible time travel scenarios we could be encountering here. One is that it's the time stream theory, where you know you throw a stick in a river, it just makes a ripple, but like yeah, everything goes back to normal, versus if you like do a cannonball into it and all of a sudden all the water's flown everywhere.
Exactly.
The one possibility could be that Barbie's not making enough of a difference in the past that it's going to affect the future. But I think that that doesn't really apply here, because A, Barbie's basically inventing traveling through space. So, you know, it's kind of cyclical now that Barbie invented space travel, yet utilizes space travel in the future. Yeah. And the only reason they know about it in the past is because it happened in the future. The other problem, of course, being that Barbie became super famous in 1959 and therefore could never return to 1987 and become famous at some point later on in the timeline, unless she remained famous for almost 30 years.
Yeah, and that fame helped it in the 80s when she grew up. It's like, oh, Barbie's back after 30 years and she looks exactly the same. Okay, my theory here is, one, gravity doesn't exist in their world, as we can tell on the space station when there is, like, it's weird. So obviously something's going on with their physics in the Barbie universe that personally cannot be correlated to ours. But also, fan theory, the reasons that it's the rockers in the first ones and the sensations in the second is because really Barbie didn't go back to her original timeline. She just melded into one that's very, very similar, where Kim still met her in the past and she still gets back to the future, but it's not Barbie and the Rockers. It's Barbie and the Sensations. Barbie and the Rockers were lost that day on the space station. They never saw them again in that timeline. But in this new timeline, it's Barbie and the Sensations who are able to return.
Yes.
That's an idea.
The multiverse theory.
Yes, I think it's a multiverse theory.
I think this original Barbie movies, like that happened way before the modern computer animated Barbie movies, these hand-drawn Barbie movies, have set up the whole Barbie universe to have a multiverse and to allow all of the Barbie movies to be happening simultaneously.
Oh, 100%. They all exist within that time stream that they got into at the beginning of Barbie and the Rockers, and it's just the different possibilities.
Wait, so... But aren't the Barbie movies, like the ones that we, like the CGI ones, aren't they like Barbie as, like Barbie in the Nutcracker, yes. Right?
It's just the natural progression of the Barbieocracy in which these worlds exist in. And right now all governments are controlled by Barbie, but at some point all media is just Barbie.
Yeah, I'm trying.
The natural conclusion of this. It's a dystopian world that's being set up from the beginning.
I mean, how else could Barbie play both lead roles in Barbie Princess and the Pauper? Mind blown. Okay, so for the podcast, we wanted to have a setup that repeats every single podcast where we kind of talk about the same things and analyze different aspects of Barbie movies that we all love. And while these movies aren't set up like the Barbie movies that we grew up with, we still had a couple categories we wanted to go through. Okay, so I wanted to start off by talking about two of the best lines in the movie, which are
also
the scariest lines. Very quotable. Okay, this first one is, was she say it at the concert or at the UN?
I think she said at the UN. She either said it at the UN or in space. I'm not 100% sure when she said this to the world. There were fireworks.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention the UN ball, but it was really important.
It barely happened, but it had like a trippy dance montage.
That was the only thing that happened.
Yeah, Barbie and her band danced at the UN after, you know, saving the world. But, you know, she's taken over the world, so clearly she's the secret head of
Barbie the UN. Barbie is the UN.
At her space concert, Barbie says, "Today is the first day of world peace. If we want it enough, it won't be the last."
Today is the first day of world peace. If we all want it enough, it won't be the last.
It just sounds so aggressive for being about world peace. It sounds like Barbie's up there on the space station about to nuke everybody unless they just give up war forever. Like, that's what I was like, that's just what it seemed as her face is being broadcasted across the world. Like, today is the first day of world peace, and if we follow my rule, it won't be the last.
Very Emperor Palpatine-esque.
Very, very menacing.
Barbie and her, what you thought was the International Space Station, is actually her Death Star.
That's, yes.
Obey me or I will destroy the planet Earth with the power of pink music notes.
It just attacks. I mean, I understand why everyone just goes along with it. I would live in fear of this very intense blonde woman screaming at me from space.
Yeah, and so the other best line comes from the very end of the second part of this two-part series. Where Kim's daughter, is her name Megan? Is something else based?
She had a name.
I thought she had a name. It was Madison. No. Start with an M. Anyways, Kim's daughter goes, "Barbie is my favorite." And Kim goes, "Barbie is everyone's favorite for all time."
Barbie, you're my favorite.
Barbie's everybody's favorite for all time.
I don't like that. That made me so uncomfortable to hear that.
Like, you know, after when we were watching that together, it was just nervous laughter from all of us.
I just feel like it would have only been amplified if all the characters then stared at the camera towards the watcher, like, everyone now go get a Barbie, kids.
Well, these were actually created in response to the popularity of Gem and the Holograms. And you can really tell, like, the animation style is very Gem and the Holograms-esque. I guess I describe a lot of things as being-esque other things. But, yeah, it's, like, trying to brainwash the audience with this.
Very murderous. It feels like Barbie just killed Gem and the Holograms. Like, they're in a back closet somewhere where Barbie just took them out. Like, that's what it feels like. Who is Jim? I don't know her. It's only Barbie.
Just, like, fighting for toy domination.
It's very frightening.
I mean, I felt, like, strong. It wasn't even subliminal messaging. It was very, like, clear, overt. Mattel was, like, had a strong message to share with everyone. Barbie's everyone's favorite.
There are no other options. I would recommend there's this show on Netflix called The Toys That Made Us, and they have an episode about Barbie, and it has, like, all, it's really, really good, and it actually talks about the, like, Barbie doll that I believe was in conjunction with this television show, but the intensity that these, like, former Mattel women or like the Mattel, like, president talk about Barbie, they're like, oh yeah, back then we saw them and we took them out. Jim was dead upon arrival. And I was like, what are they talking? No one messes with Barbie. And then there's, like, the 70-year-old woman who, like, worked for Barbie in the 60s talking about, like, the Bratz doll. She's like, if I had been working when the Bratz came out, they would have never had a leg to stand on. Like, the people at Mattel take Barbie so seriously, and it's definitely a must-watch. Just it's intense.
Yeah, we'll have to put that in our chronological list of things to watch. I definitely want to watch that.
The whole series about toys is good, but that was just like, oh my gosh, these women, like, just take it with such, like, intensity. It's very clear, like, when that the marketing behind Mattel, especially during this era, was so, like, they were not going to let anyone mess with Barbie.
And it's so, that everything in the movie is just so, ominous. Like every time Barbie does anything, it was just a collective cheer. Like I wrote down in my notes a couple times, you know, like everyone clapped because
yeah, it was definitely like
standing ovation.
Like Barbie puts on a dress. Yes, Barbie. Yes.
Yeah, or like the part that got me was like when Barbie tells her band and the world at the same time they're gonna go into outer space. All of her bandmates,
did not know,
like seven of them, are like, yes, space, that's so exciting, except for Derek.
Derek is the real MVP of this entire thing.
He was like, I don't know, Barbie. And she's like, come on. And he's like, okay.
I guess I have no autonomy. All right. I'll go to space, Barbie. I have four children and a wife I need to take care of, but I'll go to space.
That was like the only conflict of the whole movie. And they went back in time against their will and got stuck there. But there was no conflict associated with that issue.
There's just no conflict in general. I have never seen something that had no conflict in it. Like there was nothing, like things just happened.
Yeah, I felt like it was mostly just a montage of like music videos, whether that's like them in concert or them getting ready for a concert.
Yeah, or them buying clothing.
Yeah.
Can I talk about like the music in these things? Because there is like mostly like original songs that played in the background of scenes and stuff. But there were two songs that really stood out to me. One was a cover of a Beatles song, and then they also covered Cat Stevens.
I found that odd.
What is the budget for these movies where they can afford to...
Unlimited.
I mean, if you cover a song, do you not pay royalties? Is that it?
No, I think you still do. I mean, I don't know. Look, I don't know 1980s copyright right law very well, so, you know, correct me here if there's a lawyer listening, but I think they still had to pay money, and I think Barbie didn't care. I think Mattel said we are going to destroy Jim and with Cat Stevens, and that was just the intensity they went with. Like, no one's going to buy a new song from this doll no one knows about when you could get a cover of like Barbie singing the Beatles. Just saying.
Yeah, I would put that album on and dance around to it, really.
100%. I do want to mention the weirdest line part because I did put this down, but I just think that that's so strange. One, because there's no, like, I think we do need to mention that, like, none of this is very diverse at all. But the one diversity is this strange scene where they cut to this, I assume, sort of, like, Polynesian-inspired Pacific Island in which they're all in a very, stereotypical tribal guard. And there's this huge computer screen. And this one little girl just goes, Poppy! Towards Barbie.
Poppy!
And it brings up so many questions. Like, where did this scream come from? Who are these people?
Why are they standing around on a beach watching a concert?
Exactly.
Wasn't it like a jumbotron, like, floating on the water?
Yes! What was that? It was like, it's the weirdest line for the obvious, like, cultural problems there, but also in context in the film, why did it have to cut to the part of these, like, even these remote islanders know who Barbie is? You cannot escape from her. The uncontacted tribes of the Amazon know Barbie. Okay?
These two movies had a lot more diversity than the Barbie movies typically do.
That is true.
In a very sinister, like, globalist, like, global domination kind of way.
Yeah.
So in the first concert, like, Barbie's performing in front of a crowd who looks to be, like, Asian people, and she's performing
all the exact same person
all over the world. And it's just everyone's copied and pasted. And then, like, she performs in, like, Sweden, and people in, like, fur coats are, like, cheering. Like, it's very, like, we've conquered every corner of the globe, and we got one of each. And it's very, very tokenist, I guess, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, the whole thing was odd. But, like, in getting, I guess, this overlaps into the, like, best friend sidekicks, like, she seemed to have, like, a few different, and it was not very clear for all of them, like, token nationality, like, people in her band, but they all had no character, in the which I don't know a single one of their names, like none of their names.
No,
I don't know if they had names. They were like a monolith of like three girls, like one redhead, someone who's appeared to be African American, and someone who seemed to appear to be Asian, just like speaking in unison towards Barbie at all time. And I don't like that.
Well, Barbie, that's rockin'.
that's rocket. I also like the fact that, like, having a redhead, that's diversity. Like, we have a redhead, so calm down.
To be honest, I feel like the only person who had any sort of personality was, like, Derek. Because of his opposition. And then maybe Kim, because she was, like, sad, lonely girl.
Kim and Derek were the only two with any kind of character development. And I think the real romance was between Derek and Kim when they were doing their 1950s shopping, because they seemed to be having such a fun time. Like, they were just like, yeah, we're going to get new haircuts and jackets. Why Barbie and everyone else seemed just kind of lame.
That was one thing, too. One of the first things, well, after they got ready for their sock hop, they went out and bought a car before the concerts.
There was a lot of questions that the sock hop plot of these movies brought forth that don't have answers. There are no answers, I don't think.
I don't think that they really put that much thought into it when they were making it, but now looking back at it, it's just truly terrifying.
The implications of this universe are terrifying.
Oh, well, I thought it was a fun watch, though, just to see what Barbie was like in 1987, you know? Like a vision in. Also, things to laugh at, and like, wow, I hope that never becomes a thing.
I do have to say, the hair in this movie was impeccable, which is not something that you will ever see in a modern day Barbie movie, but the 80s hair was great. Ken looked like a member of Wham in the best way. I mean, there's only two, but he looked like both of them.
Ken looked great. Ken was good. Yeah, all the hair, great volume. Everyone looked nice. I will say that. The hair was probably the most positive part of the entire experience.
Though I think a good description of the animation style, because like if you've only seen the Barbie CGI movies, you'd be like, what does Barbie look like 2D? Well, just to give you like a frame of reference, when my brother walked by and saw my computer screen while we were watching, he said, why are you watching He-Man?
Yeah.
So it had that same kind of feel, though it wasn't bad animation. It was just like very 80s.
Yeah, it was of that time, you know, and it was like the big thing was with toys at this time was to have videos that went with every little thing. Like you had a TV series or you had movies, like that's how it, and normally the things were sold together in little packs. So it, you know, obviously this was just something that was made up in like a day to be like, we need to sell this doll. So get me something to watch. The kids need to watch something with it. It was, yeah, the animation, it wasn't bad, but it's like you were saying, it was like all montages and stuff. So it's not, you know, it wasn't good. It wasn't complex enough to be like, this is good animation.
So to sum up, how would we rate Barbie and the Rockers and Barbies and the Sensations? So is it a watch or a not watch?
I kind of want to say it's a watch, like in a weird way, just to hear them say, now that I've thought about it some more and just to rewatch and be like, oh no, and just see if I can find more, because I feel like it's just such an odd little film.
Yeah, I feel like it depends on your investment in Barbie. Like, if you're just kind of like casual Barbie watcher and you're like, yeah, I've seen Princess and the Pauper, I've seen Swan Lake, then like, this might not be your jam. But if you're more invested and you're kind of like, I kind of just want to know more about the Barbie culture, I think this is a good watch, because then you really get to see like the intensity behind Barbie.
It separates the Barbie amateur from the Barbie, like, professional. Like, are you really committed to this or not?
Yeah, no, for me, it's definitely a must-watch. And canonically, it's the first film in the Barbie universe, so I'm glad we got to watch it together and rate it. If you guys at home want to watch Barbie and the Rockers and Barbie and the Sensations, you can find them together in one crappy bootleg video that we watched on a YouTube watch party app. And if you have any questions, comments, or any little tidbits you want to send in about the upcoming movies we're going to watch, which we're going to watch them in chronological order, feel free to email us those at girlslikeyou@gmail.com. And we're looking forward to talking to you guys next time as we watch Barbie and the Nutcracker.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Why are we waving?